is it with the numbers?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It's the morning open, a look at the economy as stock trading gets underway this morning. We're about 20 minutes in. Microsoft looking up, or is it? The Fed chief speaks, and where's the stimulus money going? All that coming up. But first, another question. Where's Wall Street? The S&P pretty much flat right now. The NASDAQ up about 0.8%. The Dow down about 0.1%, 6 points at 10,074. Markets are up in Europe, even despite a surprising British GDP report showing the economy there shrinking in the third quarter. Asian shares were mostly higher today as well. Jim Dunnigan is Chief Investment Officer over at PNC Wealth Management. He's with us this morning live from Philadelphia. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Steve.
So we got these Microsoft earnings beating market expectations, right? I was in Philly this week attending a conference of a bunch of business journalists, and one of the things we were talking about is this multitude of ways that companies can report their numbers. I mean, what do we make of these numbers when they're saying profits were down, what was it, 18%, but it was because of so-called deferred revenue?
There is a lot of noise in these numbers, and I think in the Microsoft numbers, you see the same theme that we've seen. Not much on the top end on revenue, but more on controlling cost, and a lot of that is some of the noise in the numbers with tax deductions and things like that. So it's difficult to get to the real business momentum that you see in a particular company.
I mean, this is obviously a way for Microsoft to say, well, you know, things not – I mean, they're okay right now, but things are going to get much better next quarter, right?
Exactly. But I think what we have to start, you see a lot of companies beating estimates, but what we're not seeing, so they're managing the bottom line, but we're not necessarily seeing that top line growth, you know, new markets, new revenue that we can build on something for the future.
Let's talk about this move by the Pazar and the Obama administration to limit executive compensation at bailed out companies. Do you think it sets a dangerous precedent quickly?
Well, I think it's in some interesting territory, certainly an emotional issue. I think a lot of what you see, though, is the headlines get into sort of what they get paid, but I think the second page will get to and how they get paid, and I think you'll start to see more restricted stock and the like, which just ties them into the long-term performance of the company.
Jim Dunnigan in Philly. Jim, thanks.
You bet.
All right. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke just wrapped up a speech on Cape Cod. He was addressing a conference on financial regulation. His speech could be characterized as a call to action. We're going to check in with Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson. He's been watching the speech this morning, and he's with us live at our bureau in New York. Good morning, Jeremy.
Morning, Steve.
So what did the chairman have to say?
Well, he was speaking in beautiful Chatham, Massachusetts, but his words were really directed at Congress. He said, "We're starting to come out of this crisis, and legislators really need to take advantage of our collective memory and enact reforms now while we still care."
With the financial turmoil abating, now is the time for policymakers to take action to reduce the probability and severity of any future crises.
Specifically, Steve, he said there should be stronger capital requirements for banks. He reiterated his support for a better focus on consumers. And he said Congress needs to create an orderly way to wind down an institution when it's in trouble.
Now, Jeremy, every time the Fed chairman speaks, people wonder whether he's going to give any indication of interest rates. Did he do any of that?
He did not mention interest rates, which, as you know, stay are near zero now to try to juice lending in the economy. He was asked about bank stress tests, which the government conducted earlier this year to make banks had enough capital. He was asked, are they going to do this again? He said, no, that was a one-time thing.
All right. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson from our Marketplace Bureau in New York. Jeremy, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
Listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Friday, October 23rd, 2009, at marketplace.org. We told you about the British Gross Domestic Product report. Well, many economists there had thought the GDP would rise, officially putting an end to the recession. Marketplace London correspondent Stephen Beard is with us to talk about the reaction to the number. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Steve.
So how bad are these numbers and what's behind them?
Britain's GDP fell by 0.4% in the third quarter, and this is an historically bad figure. It's the first time in more than half a century that the UK economy has contracted for 6 months in a row. What's behind it? A sharp decline in the services sector, catering, hotels, distribution all perform badly. And more generally, consumer spending has softened. There was no growth at all in retail sales in September.
And why, Stephen, did this report come as such a surprise?
Well, because there have been some tentative signs of recovery over the third quarter and more positive signs for the global economy. Also, the British government and the Bank of England have thrown so much at this economy, people really were expecting more signs of life. I mean, we've had a £1 trillion bailout of the banks, a cut in sales tax, a big and quite successful car scrappage scheme, and short-term interest rates of only 0.5%. So people thought, really, the economy had to at least have crawled back into positive territory after all that. The currency markets reacted quite badly to this, Steve. The pound fell a cent against a weak dollar on the news. Currency traders seem genuinely concerned that the UK may turn out to be the only major economy still in recession.
And we're going to see about that. We get the first look at US third quarter GDP next Thursday. Stephen Beard in London, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
We know consumers have gotten overextended with banks, borrowing more than they can pay back on houses, credit cards, and the like. Then there are people, many of them poor, who don't even have a bank account. At a conference today in Washington, consumer advocates and lawmakers will turn a spotlight on the so-called underbanked. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
Imagine for a second that you're one of the 50 million or so Americans without a checking account or a credit card. You live paycheck to paycheck, then the car breaks down and the rent's due.
Consumers will turn to these higher cost products, including payday loans, which unfortunately can really escalate in terms of the cost.
Melissa Coidy of the New America Foundation says the solution is to bring people living off the credit grid in so they can borrow on reasonable terms in an emergency and start saving to build financial security. Arjun Shoot of the Center for Financial Services Innovation says with access to credit down in the recession, new models are needed.
It wants to provide powerful new capabilities and protections to consumers, but on the other hand, not to stifle innovation.
Innovation can be as simple as letting low-income consumers build a credit score by showing they pay their utilities and rent on time. And advocates say while new laws are needed to protect consumers, banks need to be encouraged to reach out to people just starting down the credit road. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
President Obama's talking clean energy today at MIT. The topic seems to be on everybody's mind these days. This week, New York City announced a program designed to create 13,000 so-called green jobs over the next decade. Lisa Roth explains what the big green apple's planning to do and what other cities can learn from it.
New York's plan includes projects that'll do everything from cleaning up old industrial sites to making buildings more energy efficient. It's supposed to bring more green businesses to the city and train people for green jobs. Mark Eisman directs the New York Urban Program for the Natural Resources Defense Council, and he says New York's expertise in financial markets will help with things like carbon trading.
Wall Street will need to play a leading role in that new field, and so it's natural with Wall Street located in New York that we work to make sure that we're the leaders in that.
The city is putting up some of its own money, but it hopes to attract funds from other sources. Seth Pinsky is president of the New York City Economic Development Corporation.
So the $7.5 million that we're using in city funding is going to, we believe, spur investment on a much greater scale.
The city started several similar initiatives lately, including business incubators for food and fashion. The mayor's up for re-election next month. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
It's hard enough for recent college grads to find jobs in today's tough economy. Now, a new survey out today says prospective employers think they're unprofessional. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
The 500 business executives who took the survey complained that young employees fresh out of college were disrespectful, didn't have a good work ethic, and weren't professional looking.
Is there a belly showing or not? Piercings and tattoos that are more broadly shown than they need to be.
Todd McCarty is Senior Vice President of Human Resources for Reader's Digest. He says he could live with the piercings and tattoos, but text messages and emails with typos, that drives him crazy.
No punctuation, bad spelling is not getting the message clearly across.
David Polk conducted the survey. He's a sociologist at York College. Polk, who's 61, says part of the problem is the same thing baby boomers used to complain about, the generation gap.
We threw away the tie-dye shirts and the bell-bottoms, And we're now out there calling the shots, and quite frankly, we've gotten conservative in our old age.
And Polk says tattoos and piercings could become the norm after the boomers retire. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
President Obama kicked off the first stimulus-funded road project back in March, a repaving job in suburban Washington, D.C. It's been almost 8 months, and the project is almost done. The Marketplace has been keeping tabs. Reporter Elizabeth Threlkeld this morning says while this project is wrapping up, many others are not.
New Hampshire Avenue is getting a paint job. Workers are laying down three-foot-long strips of white paint at a crosswalk. It's the last step in the repaving project.
Sections, basically, they just put it down, and then with a propane torch, they melt all the edges together, and it forms just one uniform bar all the way across.
That's project manager Scott Dauphiné. He says he's relieved the job is wrapping up.
I mean, there was a lot of eyes on it since this was the first job in the country for the stimulus plan.
This is one of only a few stimulus transportation projects that's actually finished. Most are just getting started.
It takes a while to spend $1 trillion.
Eric Gillespie is chief information officer for Onvia, a research firm that tracks stimulus spending at recovery.org. He says a lot of stimulus money has been committed to states, but not all the funds have made their way to actual projects yet.
I think the timeline was aggressive from the beginning, and the view was pretty optimistic. The projects today that are underway, I would say, are fewer than anyone expected.
The federal government has promised to fund over $35 billion in stimulus road projects. Gillespie says they've only cut checks to contractors for close to $14 billion so far. Another reason for the slow start is logistics. Victor Mendez is head of the Federal Highway Administration.
We're kind of venturing now into the next phase of the more complex, larger projects that have taken a little bit longer to get them ready actually to contract out.
Once more stimulus money starts flowing, planners are hoping all the projects end up like that first one in Maryland, on time and under budget. In Washington, I'm Elizabeth Threlkeld for Marketplace.
And finally, I thought I would never, ever utter the words balloon boy on this broadcast, but apparently it is all the rage this Halloween. Since the Colorado incident that authorities continue to investigate, several costume kits have popped up online. The creators of one of them, Plantraco Microflight, says they're selling them by the thousands, partly because of a mock video on YouTube showcasing the product.
Are you on board there? Falcon, come back, Falcon!
The National Guard is coming.
Quick, someone call Wolf Blitzer at CNN.
The kit includes shiny UFO-like balloon, string, and box in case you need to hide in the attic. From Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.